Welcome to Manager Tools Development Challenge 2006. If you don't know what that is, stay tuned. Hello, this is Michael Lozan, and on behalf of myself and Mark Horseman, welcome to Manager Tools. Today, if you're a little surprised about getting this, surprise. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. This month, we're opening up our Registered Users podcast to all our listeners. Now, we're doing this for several reasons. First, to say thanks to all of you who are listening. We appreciate that you're taking time to think about your management lives and that you think that we're adding value. Also, when we started this members-only podcast, we realized, though, that there were some ideas in here that were just too good to limit. And you know that old saying about information wanting to be free. So here's some free information. Finally, we wanted to encourage non-registered users to become registered. Each month, our registered users get an extra podcast made only available to them. Previously, we addressed such topics as our favorite books, periodicals, and sources of information, as well as some of Mark's favorite tools like the meeting introduction tool. This month, though, we're initiating a recurring theme, asking our registered users to stretch themselves a bit. We're introducing 6 development ideas in this podcast, and we're going to revisit them throughout the year on our registered users cast. We'll delve into some of these topics more deeply during those shows, and we're seriously considering asking those of you who engage in these efforts to be part of the show and tell everyone else about your experience. Now, as you might notice, I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, and I actually sound even worse during the show itself. So those of you who've been around know that last time Mark was visiting, he wasn't feeling too well and was down in my basement with pneumonia. Well, he left me a little gift, and I'm on the way to recovery, but while we were recording the show, I'm afraid things didn't sound that great. So I apologize for the audio challenges that my raspy voice may present during the show. So with that, hope you enjoy this, and join us for our first special podcast of the year, the Manager Tools Development Challenge 2006.
Welcome, everybody, to the 2006 Management Development Challenge podcast. We're really looking forward to a year's worth of casts, going into the details of management, as you know we always do, helping you get better at what you do every day. We continue to get excited about the growth in listeners, and we think that's because we really focus on the details and the how-to. For this special edition, listeners only, even though we're expanding it to, registered users only, we thought we'd expand it, and we also thought we'd issue a challenge. We've got...
Are you a big New Year's resolution type of guy?
No, I'm not.
No, I'm not either, so this is a little bit different.
Yeah, we don't want it to be just we don't want people to see it that way at all. We just thought it was the start of a year, and we thought we'd ask people to take another look at management if you're a listener or a registered user. We know that you think about management an awful lot, and Mike and I have been batting around the idea of recommendations that you can turn into projects, if you will, if you're a getting things done kind of person. And we've come up with 6 recommendations. 3 of them are pretty tactical. They're pretty straightforward and things you can do right now to make yourself more effective. And then 3 of them are a little bit bigger than that. They can certainly be broken down into tasks that you can do right away. And we, of course, talk about that. But they're a little out there and maybe not for everybody. Interestingly enough, Mark is really excited about the second 3, even though those were not the ones he came up with. Mark came up with the 3 first ones, which were boring, tactical ideas. but the big thinker between the two of us, Mike, came up with the 3 edgier topics, and we're kind of excited about the mix of the 2 different types of recommendations. Now, we'll talk specifically about what to do in each of the 6, but we do not recommend that anybody try to do all 6. That's one of the things we don't like about New Year's resolutions. People pile up on them, and gyms get full in the month of January. But in February, nobody's still there. We don't even think you should try 2 of these at the same time. If you just do 1 of the 6 that we're going to recommend, you're going to be a better manager at the end of the year than you are now. If you want to do two, pick one, do it, nail it, make it a part of your life, make it a habit, and then move on to the second one. No matter which one you choose, in whatever order, your team is going to benefit, your organization will be strengthened, and that those are never bad things, obviously. But trying to do too much and getting frustrated and ending up with nothing at all is definitely not the way to do it.
Yeah, I think it's a real good point, because I would tend to try to do all six of them. And
yeah, we all do that.
Fail on every one.
And it's better just to pick one, and it's definitely better to do one at a time. So, okay, so challenge number one. Let's get started. Let's get right into it. Our first challenge, it sounds very simple. It sounds very boring, but it is absolutely critical, and that is recommit yourself to doing one-on-ones. Perhaps for some of you, this sounds like blasphemy. My gosh, why are they suggesting that one of my recommitments is something I'm already doing?
I can't believe you're suggesting that some of our listeners may not be actually doing them after listening to us for 6 months or so.
Trust me, Mike, they're out there. We get emails that say things like, "Hey, I don't really like the idea of one-on-ones. I'm not really into coaching, but I have someone who needs feedback. Can I do it this other way that you don't recommend?" Kind of like, we actually feel strongly about the recommendations we make. We don't try to make thousands of them. We make a few and we feel strongly about them. And I'm sure I've said it 50 times if I've said it once. We believe that the core of great management is communication, and we believe one-on-ones are the easiest way to connect with your direct reports in a way that will significantly improve your communication.
I know you're not suggesting that you can't be a great manager without doing one-on-ones, but my feeling is your chances of being a great manager, unless you have extraordinary skills, are much reduced.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think the chances of becoming a great manager, or even a really good manager, if you don't do one-on-ones, are pretty slim. I'm routinely surprised at how much managers of all stripes overrate how well they communicate with their people. And how many times have we heard it, Mike? People say, "Well, I don't really need to do one-on-ones because I talk to my team all the time." And as we've talked about before, then why, when I go into organizations, is it that all the teams tell me they really don't know what's going on? And I think there's a difference between talking to your team all the time and creating a space where you can talk about them and you can talk about what they want to do, and talk about something other than the particular project or the work that you're doing right at the time. So,
Hey, can you hold on 1 second?
Sure.
The princess of the household just walked down.
Of course.
Hey, girly. You can't come down. Daddy's working down
for K2. All right, I'm back.
Good. Always nice to hear Sydney's voice, though.
She loves you.
Okay. And look, we're not kidding ourselves. We know that there are plenty of people out there who hear the idea of one-on-ones, think they're a great idea, but for some reason didn't start. It was a bad time of year. Some people started but didn't really commit to it for whatever reason in terms of staying through it 4, 6, 8 weeks after they started. And then the holidays came up, too, and sometimes it's much harder to stick through things when people are saying, "Oh, I really need to do some shopping," or whatever, or you let it slide a little bit and they let it slide, and suddenly 3 weeks went by and you haven't met with your folks. Well, regardless of why people are doing or not doing one-on-ones, some of you liked them, didn't start. Others started, didn't commit. The holidays make it tougher. Regardless, we want you to recommit. It is a great way to send a message that you care about your folks, that you want to increase communication. Whenever communication increases, team output improves noticeably at some point. So how can you recommit? That's always the manager tools question, is how do I do this? What do I do? And we have an email that you can send, and we're going to post it on the site. It'll be there. And you can grab it from the web and modify it to your heart's content, but it'll sound something like this. "Team members, I've decided to recommit to meeting with you weekly in one-on-ones. I thought I'd follow through last year. I stumbled a bit.
I believe in one-on-ones, and I want to make them work throughout this year. At some point, I want us to look back and wonder how we did things before we had them. I want them to become like clockwork. The more we communicate, the more effective we're going to be. We're not going to get better by doing everything the way we always have. I think of one-on-ones as a step forward in the way I manage and how we communicate. I need your help to stay on track with this. If you see me sliding during the year, you have my permission to point it out and ask me to stick to my commitment to you and to the team. If you feel I'm trying to decide between moving a meeting and canceling it, moving it till next week, for instance, stick up for yourself a little bit and say, hey, are we doing these things every week or not? I'll get the message. Please let me know within these windows what might work for your schedule on a regular basis, respectfully, and then your name. That's what I recommend. Recommit to one-on-ones. If you can only pick one thing to recommit to this year or for the first 6 months of this year, let it be one-on-ones.
Good.
Okay.
Okay. How about challenge number two?
Okay. This is a little bit different. It's something that we have some specific recommendations on, but it also has a little bit broader implications, and it's expand your horizons. One of the things we've all learned about management over the years, I'm sure, is that there's an inevitable downward creep on the horizon of your timeline, if nothing else. I'm sure everybody's been in the situation I've been in where there's a Sunday where you think you have a pretty good handle on what your priorities are going to be for the coming week. You're fired up about them. And then Monday hits you square in the face. When management priorities, Mike, when they get driven by day-to-day, hour-to-hour, crisis-to-crisis task management, it's really hard to even dream about the big picture, let alone think about it or plan for it and so on. I think one of the reasons that we tend to allow our horizon to creep closer and closer to us is that we don't have anything to do about the big picture. It just tends to stay a dream. It tends to stay in our doodlings or our noodlings over the weekend. There's nothing we can actually get started on, a task that we can check off and say, wow, I'm actually doing something big picture here. And I think if you do that for a while, if you're a manager with some experience, you've probably even lost the ability to be creative about what might be on your list about big picture, strategic, or expansive thoughts.
And actually, I think some folks have made the mistake by believing that since we don't talk about the strategic a lot, that we don't care about it. And that's not true at all. And I think what you're talking about is our desire in general to take things that are broader and more expansive and make them practical down to their specific. And the same thing we do in our coaching and management is the same way you can do things relative to strategy and broadening your thinking.
Yes. I worry when we start talking about strategic things, although, by the way, this is not one of the edgier topics. This is just thinking big picture a little bit. I worry that people will say, yeah, I'm going to do this, and then they'll throw a couple other things in their plate, and they'll end up with too full a plate. So we're not suggesting you do this and one-on-ones. We're suggesting you pick one of these and work on it for a while and then get it habitualized and then at some point consider adding another one. But yes, this is part of management. We've only got 20 or 30 podcasts out there. We've got hundreds of topics to cover in the years to come. And this is also part of management. Management is not just details. There are details that you have to do, whether the project is big or small, big picture or more in the day-to-day realm. But the fact is, management happens on a day-to-day basis. So we've got some suggestions of things you can do that are big picture, but we slice them up into doable tasks. So here are a couple of things you can do to get started keeping your horizons a little bit broader. The first one is read the book, The World is Flat by Tom Friedman. I happen to think this is the best business book of 2005, and it will also be the best business book of 2006, even though it's not going to be published in 2006. I gave it to Kate and Travis, my two college-age kids, for Christmas. And they didn't groan too much, although it's a big book.
It is.
I really believe this may be the most important business book that's going to be published in the next 10 years. If you are just starting out, this book captures more of the trends that will have more of an impact on your professional life than any other book I've ever read, and I wish I were starting my career right now so I would be able to read about all the things that are going to be affecting me for the next 10 years. There's an excerpt from the book that I'll just share very briefly. If you go to a McDonald's in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, here in America, and you go through the drive-thru, Mike,
And I've been there, by the way.
Yes.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, Cape Girardeau. I want to say there's a Procter & Gamble plant there. If you go through a McDonald's drive-thru, you will, when you give your order, you are not talking to a person in that McDonald's. There are people who say, well, outsourcing is a terrible thing, and gosh, we don't want to send our jobs elsewhere. But there are some jobs that you just can't send other places. And you might think that working in a fast food restaurant is a job that you couldn't outsource. Wrong. In the book, Friedman talks about how if you go through a drive-thru there in Cape Girardeau, your order is actually being taken by a call center in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And interestingly enough, that call center is run by a West Point classmate of Mike and I, Steve Biggory, who's a McDonald's franchisee, a very successful one. And Steve basically discovered that people who do nothing but take orders are much better at people who are rotating through other jobs. And you can save money and save time. The drive-thrus that you go through that use this system are more efficient and produce more profit than the normal way of doing a drive-thru. What they do is you actually, when you talk into the microphone, they're taking a picture of you. They're taking your order in Colorado Springs by high-speed data line, and they're forwarding it out back out to the restaurant for the order to be filled. And it comes with a picture of you, so they make sure they give the order to the right person. Fascinating. It tells you what digitization and data lines and fiber optics have done for communication and how you make assumptions that probably aren't true. And to prove that we're taking up this challenge ourselves, Mike and I, we are actually seriously considering engaging an MBA from India to be a research assistant for Manager Tools. One of the other excerpts of the book, they talk about a company called Brickworks from India, where you can actually hire for less than the price of a United States administrative assistant. You can get an MBA from India to do research, to prepare presentations, to do more in-depth, more higher level work, for less price than you would pay an administrative assistant here in the United States. You'll read about that in the book.
So what's going to happen to your job? That's the question.
Yes. And Friedman talks about the different types of jobs and how you can insulate yourself against that kind of outsourcing or offshoring, depending upon how you look at it. Okay. So there's one thing you can do. Read that book. Another idea in this vein of expanding your horizons is to learn a new skill. We don't want to pick a particular skill. We want you to think about it and pick one that you think will be helpful to your career. And we want you to make a plan to pick up one new skill that's not a strength for you this year. Don't go to three different conferences and dabble lightly in all three and think, boy, these are all interesting things, and then do nothing about them. Pick one skill and make a plan for improving it throughout the year. And we have three specific suggestions for you that you can ignore if you like, but they're something to get you started. The first one is learn how to sell. A lot of people, particularly technical people, not only don't know how to sell or understand how their company sells their product, but then they make it worse by poo-pooing the people who do actually sell products, which seems silly to me, because if your product doesn't get sold, everybody's salary suddenly is at issue. But here's what you can do. Figure out how to meet somebody in your company that actually sells your corporate product. Spend a day in the field with them. Watch them talk to customers. You might say to yourself, well, gee, I don't know how hard that will be. Well, have you ever called and tried to find out? I bet there's a sales manager who would say, yeah, I'd love for an IT manager or an engineering manager or a product manager to spend a day with my folks to have you realize what it's really like to talk to customers and how customers don't just magically buy our products just because we say they should. Watch these people talk to customers. Ask them how they learned about how to sell, what they'd want you and your team to know about their customers, what they'd want you to know about the products. If you want a book, the best book about selling that I have ever read is by a guy named John Rackham, R-A-C-K-H-A-M, and it's called Spin Selling. And SPIN stands for Situation, Problem, Implication, Need. One of the reasons I like the book is there's a big pile of data to support Spin Selling's fundamental principle of how to sell. It's a fabulous book. It's old. It's probably 10 or 15 years old, but it's still exceptionally good. Second thing you can do is learn project management. A lot of people talk about being a project manager and then really don't know what they're doing other than they're managing a bunch of tasks. What you can do is talk to the project managers in your firm about how they've learned, what system they use, and what resources exist for free within your company. Usually companies that have project managers have some sort of online resources, but maybe not in yours. And if you really want to turbocharge the efforts that you're going to put out in this regard, one of the best professional organizations in the world in terms of management development is PMI, the Project Management Institute. They have chapters everywhere. They're active in providing resources. Yeah, I think it costs like $100 to join, but that keeps out just anybody who's interested in joining a club. It's not a club. And I'm sure you can vouch for this in your organization, Mike. PMI certification to be a certified project manager, it's really highly regarded. It's not. It may not be an MBA, but it's not just going to a one-day course. It means that you've taken your time and really developed yourself.
Yeah, it's very highly regarded.
Yeah,
but you don't have to get your PMP to learn about project management. There's some learnings on the south side of getting your PMP that will really help you in your career and help you implement projects. And you know, by the way, that's what senior executives value, is people who can actually go out and make things happen.
Yes,
it's not always the guys with the ideas or the ladies with the ideas. It's those that can actually implement the idea.
Yeah.
So learn how to project manage.
Yeah. That's why there's such a focus on entrepreneurs a lot of times, because they're the ones who actually have ideas and then actually implement the ideas and actually make them stick. The third thing we recommend is to learn finance. Mike knows a great deal about this, a great deal more about this than I do. And I actually joke about it when people start talking to me about stuff. I say, look, there are two things I don't know anything about, finance and real estate. But quite frankly, you ought to know how to sell. You ought to know how your company's products are sold, and you ought to know how your company accounts for money. And this is another opportunity to leverage, or even better, to develop a network in an area where you probably don't have expertise. The next finance or accounting person you meet in your company, in your organization, stick out your hand, introduce yourself, and tell them, look, you know something I'd really like to know more about. Take them to lunch, find out more about what they do, brainstorm with them about how you could just learn some basics. And then there are a couple of books we can recommend about this as well. One is Finance for Non-Financial Managers, and the other one is How to Read a Financial Report. They both seem very simple probably to you, and yet that's a great way to get started. And then, again, developing your network and spending some time on a regular basis with somebody who knows something about it, you can probably quiz them and they can make further recommendations. And, if you like seminars, one that I've heard spoken very highly is something called the Lemonade Stand, where it's all across the country on a regular basis. And what they do is essentially form you into groups, and you have to build a lemonade stand. And they put you through a series of hypothetical situations, and you've got to learn by doing about cash flow and capital and resources and so on.
Hmm. Is that the same organization that puts out the book?
Yes.
It's a really cute book. Matter of fact, I gave it to my wife to read. She's not an accountant, nor am I, by the way. But I gave her that book to read because she does a lot of the financials for our Taekwondo school.
Uh-huh.
So it's very good. I liked it a lot.
Good.
Let me just chime in a little bit, which is, if you don't understand how to look at P&L or how to read a balance sheet or balance statement, you are severely challenged in terms of rising up through the corporate ladder. I mean, that's the language at which people talk. When you're going to have a conversation with your CEO, whether you're in IT or engineering or sales or whatever, the language you're talking is financial. So learn it. It's one of those things you cannot get away without if you're going to rise to the top levels in any corporate structure.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Mike. I just put two and two together as you sit here talking about executives, and I realize I say this all the time when people talk to me about becoming a CEO, and we talk about the importance of people and relationships and so on. When you get to the level of CEO, when you get to the C-level jobs, if you get a bunch of those people together, particularly from different companies, I guarantee what they immediately start talking about is numbers. And the numbers, the report cards that they deal with are all financial.
And their numbers, their ratios,
yep.
It's amazing. Yes, absolutely.
Good. Okay. Challenge number three, and this is one that's near and dear to my heart, and the title of it is Go Home. Folks, you spend too darn much time at work, and a lot of it is spectacularly unproductive time. Look, if your family is really number one, your number one priority, why is it that they're never on your calendar? Or rarely on your calendar, unless your spouse or significant other says, okay, don't forget, we have to be at school for the church, for the school Christmas pageant at 5:30 tonight or at 4:30 tonight. And probably the first thing you did was groan and said, well, I've got a really busy day today, hun. And I just find it is shocking to me that people who say at work, look, my schedule manages me, that my schedule is what's most important. There is no way that you can say that and then not have your family on your calendar and say, well, you can say your family is number one, but you're essentially leading a double life and it's not effective. And, you know, I don't know, Mike, maybe you have a horror story, but I sure don't have any horror stories about what happened at work while somebody went to one of their kids' soccer games. I can't think of a single instance. Yeah, I keep not reading about buildings burning down while indispensable managers go on vacation. And yet, gosh, I mean, the number of people who whine about how busy they are while they're on their own vacation, it's just frustrating. So, I think I've said this before on our podcast. I have videotapes of managers between 5 and 7 in the afternoon. And while they think, well, if you're a manager who thinks, well, okay, I'll put that off to the end of the day, I'll get that done before I go home. The fact is you won't get it done before you go home because people sit around and do almost nothing for a couple of hours and entertain visitors at their desk and so on after everybody else has gone home. So step one is to start now. Sit down with your spouse or your significant other and talk about the days of the week that are best for you to be home at a specific time. I mean, tell your spouse, look, family's number one. Let's make sure that I don't let work creep into my family so often that when I say that, you cringe because it's really not true that family is number one. Now, look, to be fair, there's probably at least one day a week where your spouse will say, look, if you want to stay late that night, that's okay. Now, you should still have a drop-dead time that you go home at. If you don't have a plan, if you don't agree on a plan, somehow every day ends up creeping into being one of the long days and you never go back and ask forgiveness. You never go back and recommit. And so we're asking you to recommit now. And, step two, put a hard stop on most days, put a hard stop on your daily work plan. Put your family dinner time or time with your spouse, or time with your son or your daughter, on your calendar at work, in Outlook, or whatever program you use. It's easier to say no to a boss who's scheduling a meeting at 6 o'clock when you look down and say, oh, I'm sorry, I've got to go tonight. I've got a dinner at home. Yeah, you'll probably fall off the wagon during the year when things get busy. My neat little trick for dealing with that is to hit... to use Outlook, and I use a keyboard shortcut. I hit Control-Shift-K, and that opens up a new task, and I entitle the task, How Are You Doing With Family Time? And then I make it a recurring task, and I do it once a month just to remind me, okay, I've probably slipped a little bit. I set my sights high, and I've fallen off in the last week or so, so I'm going to recommit in the first 2 weeks of February, and I'm going to recommit again in the first 2 weeks of March. You'll find that you have a much better year and you don't get any less done at work. So, challenge number three, go home.
Good.
Okay, now we move to the edgier stuff. And I'm really excited about this.
It's not that edgy.
It's not edgy. But you know, I think it's a change, Mike, from our really tactical, down in the weeds, step-by-step-by-step kind of stuff. It suggests that management is more than just the unsexy, unpretty, boring, repetitive kind of stuff. Management is those things, but when you put it all together and you do it well, it can really be something inspiring and exciting.
Well, edgy or I think of these are things that might make you, and I'm encouraging folks to do something that makes you feel a little uncomfortable.
Yes.
Which, you know, you're on the edge of your seat, you're worried about what the results are going to be, and boy, there's a lot of beauty that comes out of putting yourself in a vulnerable position, because
yeah,
if you do these things, you will be vulnerable.
Yeah, so, exactly. You know, yeah,
yeah. Embrace it. So, so my first, our challenge number four is Mark titled "Swing for the Fences." What I mean here is go do the impossible. Pick something within your organization or within the company that seems impossible at that point in time. Maybe it is, but the sheer act of picking this, you know, big, hairy, audacious goal is very empowering. My example of that is actually has the roots of manager tools are in there, which is when I was an IT director back at MCI several years ago. I was responsible for, amongst other things, I had this big mainframe, old technology application that was responsible for running the entire customer database for the consumer business. So at the time, we had like over 20 million customers. And this thing did millions of transactions every day, and it could not go down. If it went down, literally 15,000 people were out of work. So the millions of lines of code, it was just a bear. When I took over the organization, they had over 600 and I think it was like 627 or something like that, 627 trouble tickets, i.e. there were 627 problems logged by the user community with the application.
That just seems mind-boggling. Even though I was involved, it seems just unbelievable.
Well, a lot of our users thought it was unbelievable too. So, I won't go into details of how we attacked the problem, but needless to say, we had lots of user meetings and prioritization and you name it.
Right, but right.
In any case, the challenge had been, or the way the approach people had taken prior to us choosing this goal was that, you know, well, what's a reasonable amount of progress to make against that 637? Could you, in the course of a year, reduce it by 10%? Now, remember, it's been at 600 for, you know, years probably.
Huh.
So 10% reduction sounds, you know, that sounds meaningful.
Yeah.
20% sounds great. 30% sounds even better. But that's kind of incremental thinking. So, I'll tell you, I set the goal. I remember... this is probably 60 days after taking the organization over. Had a big all-hands meeting with the management team, and I set a number of goals. We won't go to all of the goals, but there were three or four key objectives like this. But this particular one was, the goal was zero by the end of the year. to go from 637 to zero. I'll tell you... my management team was not happy with me. They thought it was absolutely unachievable. They thought I was absolutely nuts. And I had a good relationship with them, so it wasn't a broad problem. In this particular case, several of them came up to me, my senior managers came up to me and said, "This is we can't do this." I said, "Well, no, you can. And so go tell me how you're going to go do it." So make a long story short.
But before you go any further, though, Mike, I mean, this is... I've always loved this story. It's one of the things that I put in the bucket of why you're a great manager. What went through your head before you said zero? I mean, because look, the guy before you and probably the guy or person before him was like, well, 10%, 20%, let's work at it. We'll see what we can do and so on. What made you go off half-cock like that?
Half-cock? You know, I wanted some energy around the problem. I'm sorry, you just can't get excited about 10%. You don't go home to your wife or your husband and say, "Hey, we've got this big goal. We're going to reduce trouble tickets by 10%."
Yeah.
There's no excitement. There's no talk around the water cooler. It's just standard, boring, day to day stuff. And I wanted a little bit more energy around it. I wanted some excitement. I wanted my moon landing. Incremental goals don't get you there, not in my experience at least. So, if you said, well, 637, okay, what if we set a goal of 100? Well, now that'd be a huge goal, but I don't know, how do you go around? How do you go around saying and getting excited about, we have a goal of, excuse me, the gift of Mark keeps on giving.
Yes.
You can't go around to your peers and say, hey, we're going to get this thing down from 600 to 100. Wow. Nah, nobody, that's like people going around after a football game and, you know, holding up two fingers going, we're number two. Nobody wants to say that.
Yeah.
So zero, if you had 637 and you had something on the other extreme, I don't care if the goal was 10 or 5 or 3 or 2 or 1, zero was the only thing that was exciting to me.
Yeah, and it really, I guess in a way, if you forget that you were at 600 to begin with, zero is the only one that's really professionally appropriate from the standpoint that they are travel tickets, and this is a critical, cannot-go-down system.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. You're right. It's hard to go to users and say, hey, we're only going to have 10 problems.
Yeah.
We're going to have 10 errors in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. You're right. That's hard.
It doesn't release any energy, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact is, in the end, we failed. Sorry to report that.
Yeah.
Kind of anticlimactic, but
now they know you're not such a great manager.
Yeah, I know. We weren't that good. We got down to 7.
I love that number.
So
single digits.
7. And Greg Blanchard, who was one of the managers in the organization, who was most directly responsible for this. And to say that there was one person is probably he was a production support manager, but of course. You can't be fixing the problems and then introducing a bunch of problems on the other end,
right?
You know, from the development team. So, but he was the one most directly leading the thing up, and he was actually, in some sense, a little relieved that we only got 7 because he had committed to, and he had kind of long hair, and he had committed to if we got to 0, he was going to shave his head off, shave his hair off. I think he was going to leave his head on, but he was going to shave his hair off.
There you go.
And if seeing Greg, that's and you know Greg, so
yeah,
it'd be an interesting view of Greg without hair. But
yeah, he's on our list of people that if we could hire him, we would.
Oh yeah, he's awesome. Well, I had a bunch of awesome people.
Yes, you did.
And I'd hire them all. So there you go. You know, it's the whole thing is Leo Burnett once said, "Reach for the stars." Yeah, you may not get one, but you won't end up with a handful of mud either.
Yeah,
and you know, 7 problem tickets versus 637. Definitely wasn't mud, and I said earlier, and this is where here's the other lesson here, which is I said that the roots of manager tools were here somewhat because I had two other objectives of a similar vein that were at the time considered pretty outrageous, and the other two we actually achieved. We had a pretty fast forwarding a year later, we had a very successful year, and to be honest with you, I don't think the user community, meaning customer service, marketing, sales,
right.
I don't think they had any better view of the organization than they did when we started, even though we hit all their most important metrics.
Yeah, they didn't. They said they were their metrics, but it really didn't work for them.
Yeah, it didn't. Exactly right. They lied to me.
Yeah.
So at that point, that's when I called Mark to come in and help me for the next year. And That's another story in itself, but hit all the metrics that your users say they want. You don't necessarily get what you expect.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's number 4. Challenge number 5.
Before we go to challenge number 5, Mike, I just want to go back to something. I think to me the thing that really makes number 4 the swing for the fences so powerful is that if you set a goal from 600 to 500. People tend to use incremental thinking. And that the difference for me is, if you had been my boss at the time, if I had been Mark Madigan or Mike Morsrow or Kathy Stultz or Greg Blanchard and had said to us, I want you to get to 0, fundamentally, I can't use the same thinking at all that gets me from 600 to 500. I have to say to myself, well, the old man's gone crazy. And then I think, I suspect at some point you said, okay, fine, it's not being done. But if it could be done, what would you have to do differently? Or what would you do to get there rather than to 500? And for me, That's what I look for in a leader manager, is somebody who helps me see something differently that I didn't have in my bucket to begin with. And so I imagine it was that change in thinking. Well, we never believed it was possible, but if it were possible, or even if it is impossible, what would we have to fundamentally do differently to even have a shot at zero? And I suspect that was a big part of.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We didn't. Those big, hairy, audacious goals, they absolutely challenge you. I mean, you can't get there doing the same things you've been doing. So, otherwise, you get the same results. Yeah. So, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, just doing the same thing faster is not going to get you from 600 to 7.
Yeah, and we did a lot. We implemented new processes. We implemented new quality assurance standards during development. We reorganized fundamentally parts of the organization. And so there was a lot to it. But none of that would have happened without setting the goal
right
in the beginning. And that's the whole point. It took 30 seconds, frankly, for me to decide that was the goal. But that 30 seconds produced an incredible amount of value. And, you know, frankly, I didn't have to do a whole lot other than set that goal. I mean, I met and got progress reports and all that. But literally that 30 seconds, in some senses, to be frank, it fundamentally moved my career forward within the company. There was a lot of credibility I got as a result of doing that,
right,
frankly.
In one year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Sorry.
Okay, challenge number five. So I told everybody I'm going to make you feel uncomfortable. So challenge number five might make you – if challenge number four made you uncomfortable, you're going to pick something and go announce to the world that you're going to do something that's impossible. if that makes you uncomfortable, then this one certainly will, which is my challenge number five is fire someone. And I'm deadly serious. Go out, find somebody, and fire them.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. What does that mean? Now, if you pick this one, you only have two choices here. You either fire the person. So you're going to go out. Let's assume you have an organization of seven people. And my guess is that out of seven people, there's one person who's not pulling their weight, is really a drag to the organization, and not only not performing to their standards, but also dragging the rest of the organization down with them. Now, if you're fortunate enough that you have seven or eight people on your team, and you look at them all, and they're all performing to standard, God bless you, because you're lucky.
Right.
But if you're like the vast majority of folks, you do, and if you think deeply enough about it, there's somebody that you're just lazy or scared or uncomfortable with the prospect of firing somebody. It's not something people feel comfortable with, and I've never felt comfortable with it. I've had to do it, but it's never easy and it's never fun.
Right.
So that's why it's one of these difficult things to do. So pick that person and go fire him. Now, okay, if you don't like the idea of firing, so you just kind of envision the process of bringing that person into the conference room and explaining to them why you're firing, and perhaps have to give them the tissues because they're crying, and they tell you about family problems and financial problems, and so if you can imagine the heartache of doing that and how uncomfortable that's going to feel, then okay, fine. Then your only other choice other than firing them is because you're responsible for the effectiveness of the organization, is to get them to standard, right? So, okay, I'm going to give you an out, which is coach them, you know, do one-on-ones, do regular feedback, coach them on those areas that they need coached on, and get them to standard. And if you get them to standard, then you get a buy, okay? You get credit for the firing because, in fact, you did fire the old person and you got a new employee who's doing what we're supposed to be doing. So
see, I love that. You know what? You and I hadn't talked about that. That is a brilliant way to put it. If you decide you're going to fire them, essentially what you're saying is I'm going to get rid of that person and their performance. And if I get rid of their performance, I've got a new person. And I've essentially improved the performance of my team noticeably by raising the floor. In a way, you're right. You have fired somebody, but it's just the old performer as opposed to the new performer you've got.
Right. You got somebody with new behaviors.
Right.
And those behaviors are supportive of the objectives of the organization.
Yeah.
So...
Can I ask you something? You've been a manager. You're a very successful manager, obviously, for a long time. Why don't managers do that? Why don't managers address their poor performers?
They're afraid. They don't like confrontation. They haven't learned the feedback model.
Yeah,
number
sure.
one. So giving feedback is tantamount to criticizing or attacking an individual. I think one of the most fundamental strengths of the feedback model and following it, you know, after a week or two, or certainly after 30 days, giving feedback is like breathing. It's natural, and it because you're giving both positive and negative feedback. Giving feedback isn't that earth-shattering thing you got to think about for 3 days before, you know, going and telling somebody, hey, look, when you come to work 30 minutes late every day and 60 minutes late occasionally, you know, here's what happens. That discussion just becomes natural. And until then, and we as human beings, we're, most of us at least, are adverse to confrontation. So feedback gives folks a tool to turn feedback into something other than confrontation. So it's fear. I mean, it's fear of confrontation, I think. Simple as that.
Something else I was thinking of as we were preparing for this is that not only does firing somebody change your thinking, it's kind of the opposite or a different way of thinking about swing for the fences, because it changes your thinking about, okay, what am I willing to do if I had to fire them? Is also, you never know. You may not choose to fire them, but in 18 months or 6 months or 9 months, your organization may say, okay, rank order your folks. You need to get rid of the bottom one or two. And if you haven't done this, if you haven't thought about, okay, if I had to fire somebody, who would I fire and what am I willing to do to save them? Then when the organization says to you, we've got to cut people, you may not have a good leg to stand on with your boss to say, hey, look at my folks. You pick the one that you're going to get rid of. You may be able, if you do this, you may be able to give yourself some defensibility. And there are plenty of other managers around who probably have even more, pardon the phrase, deadwood, because they're not willing to face facts and say, I need to have some tough, small conversations now to avoid having a big, tough conversation at some point in the future.
Yeah, and having gone through this many, many, many times, unfortunately, don't fool yourself in terms of the amount of effort required to change the game a little bit. In the end, and this goes all the way up to the top, people are uncomfortable with firing people. If you think that, you know, if you're, an entry-level or junior-level manager with an organization and you've been through layoffs, if you think that it's all fun and games for the CEO and for the C-level execs in the company, I you're not giving them enough credit, because, in fact, everyone I've seen, there is a lot of angst and anguish over layoffs. So it's, you know, the idea that people are just numbers isn't quite true. On the other hand, because it is so difficult, it does quickly become just a numbers game, because that's the way they disassociate themselves from the pain associated with laying off
right.
5,000 people.
Yep.
If you start thinking about it's Joe and it's Mary and it's Sam and it's Bill, that becomes very uncomfortable. So it becomes a numbers game, and not because they don't care, but because they care enough that disassociating names and faces is the only way to get through it. As a result of that, then it becomes, you know, we talked about the peanut butter effect on evaluations and the fact that if you're giving out merit raises, the worst thing you could possibly do is just give everybody a 3% raise across the board.
Right, just spread it around, yeah.
I'm fundamentally against that. But when layoffs occur, it often becomes the same thing, which is, okay, everybody, it's ridiculous, but everybody, reduce your organizations by 5%. Unfortunately, not often enough does it occur where the organization looks at what functions are no longer necessary and just eliminates, instead of 5% across the board, eliminates an organization that's either totally ineffective or not relevant anymore. And because of that, I should back up and say that it's not always the case. It's just
right.
the case more often than
right.
I'd like it to be. So when you're in that numbers game, which says lay off 5% of your organization, it is frankly very difficult to go back and make the case that, you know, your 5% should be kept.
Right.
So it's a lot of work, but it can be done. And if you're not doing some of the things we're talking about in manage tools, and particularly around this developing somebody, your odds of influencing that decision are pretty low. If you are doing everything, your chances still are not not certainly it's not a sure shot by any stretch of the imagination, but at least you have a fighting shot. So if you care about your people, then put yourself in a position, if something happens, that you have the ammunition to defend them. Otherwise, you know, you can say, well, it wasn't my decision. I didn't make the decision to leave, you know, to let 5% go. Well, yeah, maybe you didn't take, you know, you didn't proactively go do it, but you didn't do those things that good managers do so they can defend their people under the tough times. And so you're guilty of inaction.
Yes.
So don't.
I would even argue, Mike.
I'm not going to let you off the hook there.
Yeah, I would even argue that maybe if you're a developer of people and you've been working at it for 12, 18 months or 2 years or whatever, you may not be able to keep, you know, if they ask you to get rid of two people on your team because of a layoff, because other people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, you may not be able to keep both of them. Maybe only keep one of your people. But on the other hand, if the organization gets mashed together and there are several managers going for one job, the manager who does the best with developing people is going to have a leg up on others. Now, it may be that you're the least technically qualified, and there are a lot of the things that go into it. But if there's a push to developing people, if there's a push to really getting the most out of people because of productivity improvements and so on, which are often talked about after a layoff, if you're the manager who spends time developing people and you can show a noticeable improvement on people in your team, you're going to be given extra credit for that when they look at how the organization is going to be restructured, and you may very well end up with more people because of it. It may be because of a layoff, and that's not a great thing. But partially, this is a self-preservation technique, not only for your team but for yourself as well. You want that reputation absolutely. Of somebody who develops, takes care of their people, and develops people, and challenges them, and is willing to tell somebody, "Hey, you're not pulling your weight." Managers who are perceived by others as caring, who also can say to somebody, "You're not pulling your weight, and I expect you to, and here's how we're going to fix it." You know, there are very few managers who have that reputation in corporate America, and you will stand out in a positive way immediately if you're one of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, also makes it, you know, if you're making the tough calls, then it's, you got a lot of credibility when it comes to making the other calls, which is, hey, this person ought to be promoted.
Yes.
You know, if all you're ever talking about is giving people raises, promoting them, moving the higher levels of responsibility, but you've never taken the action of firing somebody or putting somebody on corrective, you know, actions or
right.
anything along those lines. Well, you just don't have credit. You have
less
credibility when it comes to
yep.
yeah. So
good.
All right.
Okay.
So now you fired someone. Now the next my last thing, our challenge number six, is do a deorg, and that's Mark's term. My term is real simple. Give away a part of your organization. If you got a team of 30 people, give away 10 of them to another part of the organization.
No, are you serious? No,
yes,
I love it.
I
just love this idea. When you suggested this one, I felt like I was just jumping on the bandwagon by calling it a deorg, because I just think it's absolutely brilliant. It's so countercultural, and I think those kinds of ideas really make people sit up and think. So I love this.
Well, one. Yeah, you're going to shock the heck out of people. Most, you know, in most organizations, power is measured by the number of people you have, the number of responsibilities.
Right. The that affects your budget. And, sure.
And you know, I'll admit, anybody knows me knows I did this. So I'm not. But you know, back in my you know, 15 years ago, whatever, I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out how to amass a large organization.
Right.
And I did. I think I did it in a good way. And since my philosophy was, well, achieve results and people will give you more responsibility.
Yeah, that's a little different than just politicking for a part of an organization. If you're achieving results and the organization decides that you're a results person, and so if we give you more, you'll get more results, that's a little different than the fiefdom building or the empire building that some people engage in.
Yeah, well, I wasn't pure as a driven snow.
Okay,
so
okay.
I can go back in time and think about, you know, at the time I felt completely justified, and I felt that there were some organizations that moved over that were good fits. And if I go back in time, I'm not absolutely convinced I was right, to be honest with you. So, and so later on in my career, I did exactly what I'm talking about here, which is, you know, an organization grows, you amass people, you amass responsibilities, and then at some point you look at your organization and, you know, you go like, well, well, do I have, you know, should I have developed, now here's a classic one if you're an IT person. I had this debate many, many times, and we won't decide the right answer here, but should I have, you know, should a manager have the development organization and the quality assurance organization? And that's kind of like the fox watching the hens type thing. So I ended up in many situations where I had those kind of conflicts that just didn't make sense organizationally.
Right.
You know, you're trying to, you know, as a development organization, you're trying to crank out as code and roll things out as quickly as possible. Of course, you're concerned about quality, but you have a different set of drivers that are driving a quality assurance organization. And so, you know, a manager who has responsibility for both, well, you put yourself in some really awkward positions.
Yes.
And you're probably not as effective as you should be. There's a natural tension that happens between parts of an organization, and this is just an example of that. We're a development organization and a quality assurance organization. And as companies evolve, as organizations evolve, sometimes those natural tensions are not the structure of the organization becomes ineffective, and the natural tension is just probably one of the characteristics we could talk about when organizing. But that's a different podcast,
right,
in and of itself. So go look at your organization and identify areas where there is not a natural fit, where your skills or your organization's skills or capabilities don't match the needs of that particular piece of the organization, identify somewhere else where it would fit, and go to the other manager, and this will just absolutely blow them away. Say, hey, Susie, I've been thinking about this project management organization. You have a project management organization that manages all these functions, yet I have my own project management organization. I've been thinking, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I have 500 people in my organization. I have 500 people in my organization, of which 450 of them are developers and quality assurance folks, for example. And then I have this, you know, 50-person project management organization. You know, they get short shrift. They don't get coaching because I'm not a project manager. They don't get guidance every day. They don't get development. I'm sending people to learn how to program in C++. I'm not sending people to project management things. I don't have a project management professional development plan for the organization. So not only are these people not getting developed, they're probably not performing to the levels they should. So why don't you take it on? Why don't you take these folks and teach them how to be effective project managers, and I'll focus on doing what I know how to do, which is develop quality software.
Okay, now here's where I jump in. I'll be the devil's advocate here for a minute, Mike, because I can just hear some of our IT users out there say, the managers, directors, saying, oh, but God, if I had 500 people, of course I would want to have a project management organization, because I'm going to be talking to them a lot. They're going to be the group I least want to get rid of because they're going to give me visibility into all the things all my organization is doing.
Oh, yeah, I understand. And actually, I wish I would have stuck with my quality assurance analogy better and given away the quality assurance piece.
Right, sure.
That would have
but what you're saying is you can look at your organization and decide that other parts could go elsewhere. There's a good reason maybe why they're where they are, but you could also justify them going elsewhere, and you're suggesting pick one, the one that you could most afford to get rid of, and literally get rid of it.
Yep.
Even if there's a good reason why it's here, we can guarantee in the last 5 to 10 years it wasn't where it is now.
Right. Inevitably there always is a good reason, at least in somebody's mind, as to why the organization is where it is. And the fact is, you know, if you want to be, you know, on the edge a little bit, if there's a tie, whether the organization stays with you or goes somewhere else, the tie goes to the other person, the other organization.
Right.
And certainly anything on the side of where there's more support for moving the organization outside of yours, then clearly it goes. But, you know, if you want to be edgy about it, you know, the tie goes to the other person.
Right. Yeah.
And if at the end of this you've given away your entire organization, well, okay, that's another story.
Right. But there's a case to be made that you could get some executives looking at you going, wow, this is a smart person. He can see that really there wasn't a place for that organization. It would have been easy for him to continue to try to build his org, and yet he said, no, I'm going to do the right thing rather than the selfish thing. I've got a spot for a guy like that, a guy who's willing to make tough calls and willing to go in the face of what we all complain about all the time, which is people building their own little empires.
Absolutely. People talk about it all the time. Now, if you do this, if you actually go and do it, you will get a lot of attention. You get a lot of credibility from your peers. But the, you know, the senior managers, execs in the company will also, they'll have, absolutely, they'll respond with, and look at, nobody, you know, if you're lacking confidence, you don't do this.
Yeah.
if you're lacking skills, if you in any way, shape, or form feel like you don't have a future in the company, this is not what you're doing. You're hoarding people. You're hoarding functions, responsibilities. So, you know, I made last podcast a Taekwondo martial arts type of analogy, but this is one of those things. Sometimes when you're good, you'll give people a punch or a kick, or you'll create an opening for somebody because you're going to create an opportunity. And this is like one of those things where giving something away is you're going to get more back than you gave away.
Yep.
Given, you shall receive.
Yeah. The other thing I like about this is if I had 12 managers, or if I'm a director and I had 12 managers reporting to me and I lost one of them, I now have a little bit more bandwidth for the 11 that are remaining. You know, the fact is, if you think you can manage 15 people real well, you're going to be better at managing 10. I'm sorry, that's just the case, unless you're going to suddenly throw away the time you gave to those other five. So I like the narrowing of the scope. It'll let you see deeper into your organization because you won't have to see quite as wide. So,
yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, Mike, I hope that we get a lot of feedback about this cast because we've really touched on a lot of different subjects from the prosaic, which is as simple as one-on-ones, all the way out to firing people and rearranging your organization. I hope that every single person listening picks one of these. Not all six, not even two, pick one and come up with five or six tasks that you can do right away to move in the right direction, make them small so you get some early wins in this project, and commit yourself to becoming a better manager this year and make this project that you pick a proxy for developing your management skills throughout the year.
Yeah. And you know, if folks are not subscribed already to the members only podcast, which is just really simple, just go to the website and register on the site. Go ahead and do so, because we're going to, over the course of this coming year, we're going to keep coming back to this list and then delving in a little bit more detail into, you know, maybe how to do some of these things and addressing some of the issues that are going to inevitably come up as you try to execute these things.
Wouldn't you love to have one of our listeners on talking about one of their efforts in these six challenges?
Absolutely. I tell you what, I'm going to volunteer some of your time as well. If we'll take the first person, how about this? We take the first person who sends us a note and says, hey, I'm going to pick one. And I'd say on the more difficult, say on the last three, if somebody calls us and tells us, hey, they're going to pick their person. So if you're going to fire somebody, you're going to have to give us their name. If you're going to do a deorg, you're going to have to tell us, you know, what part of your organization you're going to deorg. We will coach you personally over the course of this year on achieving that particular objective.
Okay.
For free.
Oh, of course. Yeah. That's exciting.
There you go. So, you know, so now you're going to go to tell the person that you're going to fire. Not only am I going to fire you, but I'm actually going to go get help doing it.
Yeah. You might not say it exactly that way, but probably. I think it's powerful, and we care about people becoming better managers. We're willing to put our money where our mouth is.
Good. And then, okay, so then now on your side, if the person who's thinking that they'd like to take us up on this offer, then your side, you're going to agree to come on and either, you know, share the story. Either we'll talk about you, we can leave your name off, that's okay. Better yet, you'll actually come on the show and share your experiences with us and help us use you as an example of what to do, because we're going to make sure you do it effectively.
Good. That's exciting.
All right. Well, there you go. So hopefully after listening to this, And I know this is probably a longer one, but maybe I can edit it down a little bit. Folks will feel compelled and excited about joining the members-only list and kind of following with us over the course of the next year, walking through some of these things.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
All right, my friend. We'll see you. Well, that wraps it up. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. I know it was a long one, but I hope you got some value out of it that you can take with you throughout the remainder of 2006 as we cover this on a subsequent members-only podcast. If you haven't registered, it's easy to do. Just go to our website, www.manager-tools.com. I almost forgot our own website. Can you believe it? So www.manager-tools.com, and you can register there. As always, we appreciate feedback either on the website or on our email address, show@manager-tools.com. With that, thanks again, and we'll see you all again next time. Bye-bye.